How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast, and man, did that suck. If you're listening, having watched that game against the Denver Nuggets, I don't know what to tell you other than that sucked. The Celtics got blown out 123-107. I'm John Corrales here on the show with Sam Packard while Jay King does his thing at the Garden. And thanking you, first of all, for downloading the show, streaming it, whatever it is you do. If you do it through Audio Boom or Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, if you're listening through Twitter when we tweet out the links, thank you for doing that. Recommend our show to your friends. Rate it 5 stars. Please subscribe if you haven't done that. That really helps us out. So do that. We're asking you to give a little bit of effort, which is about what the Celtics gave tonight, Sam. They gave a little bit of effort somewhere around the beginning of the third quarter when they came out of halftime and started pressing. But, I mean, they came out and they beat the Bulls at home. They went and they're undermanned and they hung with the Cavaliers. And then I don't know if they just thought, well, look, we're good. We're fine. Even without those guys, maybe you don't have to go out and try against a not-so-great Nuggets team. Yeah, we'll be fine. And then they got smoked.
Yeah, you think that any like overconfidence they had because they were playing the Nuggets, this is supposed to be one of those kind of built-in schedule losses for Denver. They're coming in, but it was like the last game of their road trip. You think that would kind of be mitigated by the fact that they didn't have Jay Crowder, they didn't have Kelly Olynyk, and they didn't have Al Horford. And no matter when you don't have those players, you're still going to have to try in the basketball game. And then they come out first quarter. Apparently, Emmanuel Mudiay is one of the most unstoppable players in the league. And they give out 42 points in the first quarter. At some point, even if they tried their asses off the rest of the game, once you dig yourself a hole that deep in the first quarter, it's going to be really, really hard to come back. It turns out they didn't try their asses off the rest of the game or even attempt to come back. But once you get in that hole, it's really hard to win.
Yeah. And look, there's just you can't do that. You just can't first of all, okay, Mudiay got hot. He hit some crazy shots. Fine. He hit 24 in the first quarter and then only 6 the rest of the way. So he had this abnormal thing that happened. But then Wilson Chandler went nuts on whoever it was that was guarding him in the second quarter, whether it was Jarebko, who else was checking him for a little bit. I think Gerald Green had a turn.
It was the regular rotation of kind of below average wing defenders of Jarebko, Green. I'll throw Jaylen Brown in there, although he's decent. It's just kind of no one really is up to the challenge of defending Wilson Chandler, which is not a sentence I thought I would say ever on the podcast.
Yeah, but Chandler was, I think, probably the most important player in this game, even though Mudiay had that big first quarter. Okay, fine. So you go down big, 42-23 after one. So there's still time in the game to come back from that. You can steadily march your way through better second, third, and fourth quarters to recover from that. First, we've seen first quarter leads evaporate millions of times in the NBA. Wilson Chandler's second quarter, and beyond that in the third quarter, I know he left with some hamstring issues, but that second and third quarter where he just hit these key shots time and time again, whenever the Celtics, well, first of all, in the second quarter, he was just continuing the domination. In the third quarter, he and then Gallinari took turns. Whenever the Celtics started to creep a little bit, they cut it to 15, and then one of those two guys would hit a shot, and then the Celtics would try to push, and then they would miss something within 5 feet of the rim. They missed a ton of shots within 5 feet of the rim, and Denver was just going nuts. And we haven't even spoken about Jokic and Nurkic, who didn't do much in the game, but just always seemed to be a problem down low for the Celtics. It's just nothing went right for them.
Yeah, it was a combination of mental mistakes on defense, and then the Nuggets made them pay. But I remember a couple sequences just going under screens for Gallinari. I think Marcus Smart did that. It's like there's certain mistakes that you can't make, especially when a team comes out and shoots 77% from the field. Like the Nuggets got a lot of open shots. They made them pay, but the Celtics weren't doing themselves any favors. Just kind of lazy rotations. Tyler Zeller just being really unable to do anything on the defensive or offensive end of the floor. And I know I pick on Zeller, but tonight he earned it all. You said Jokic and Nurkic they didn't have a huge impact, but it just felt like the Celtics were out-muscled, whether it was Jokic, Nurkic, or Fareed just on the glass or just in the post for the entire game, and there's really nothing they can do about it. And that makes sense with Horford out of the game and Olynyk out of the game, so you don't really have any larger players other than Amir Johnson. But if you're relying on Amir Johnson, you're going to get dominated. It was just everything compiled into one, and it wasn't just the bad defense tonight. It was like you said on the offensive end, just a lot of missed shots and a lot of turning and looking at Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, just kind of expecting them to bail the starters out, and it didn't really happen.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Isaiah Thomas, I can't imagine. I mean, the Celtics got blown out, and Isaiah Thomas is the only one that really kept this thing close. That first half, he was the only guy out there for the most part, even though Avery Bradley had another 14-point, 11-rebound night and tied a career high with 6 assists. So Avery Bradley's still out there doing his thing, but Isaiah Thomas, 30 points, 5 assists, just 11 of 12 from the line. What are you going to say? I mean, that's the one lone bright spot. But, I mean, he can't do it all. He can't do everything. So he still had 4 turnovers because he's just trying to do so much. And those turnovers end up becoming the live ball turnovers end up becoming transition baskets for Denver. You look at – I haven't even looked at the numbers yet, but points in the paint, well, it was actually pretty even. I was severely expecting them to get blown out points in the paint, but I guess that's the Isaiah Thomas effect because most of his points came in the paint. But still, the Celtics turnovers really, really cost them. They had, 12 turnovers for 15 points. I don't know. Everything just went wrong. I keep repeating myself because I don't know what else to say about this game. It just sucked all the way around, and there's just no redeeming value to anything that happened in this game. I'm looking, I guess we could say that Demetrius Jackson had a nice debut.
Yeah, 8 points, 2 for 3 from the field, hit a 3-point shot. He had some decent minutes, one of 3 Celtics players to actually finish in the positive and plus minus. So if you're really taking away anything, there might be that. It was kind of interesting to see Stevens kind of just try to throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. He was playing crazy 4-guard lineups with Marcus Smart at the 4 for a while there. It didn't really work, but it was kind of interesting to see Stevens go to it. Just looking at the box score now, one of the things that kind of stands out to me the most is Amir Johnson got 16 minutes and Jaylen Brown only got 21 minutes. It kind of feels like Stevens was just so fed up with their effort in the first quarter or the first half. They just refused to go back to them. And with all the players the Nuggets have, you would expect Amir Johnson as the kind of the lone, reputable big man to get more than 16 minutes a game. And it just kind of shocking to see that 16 minutes. Apparently Stevens just did not like what he saw from Amir tonight. And I can't really remember anything Amir Johnson did except for catching one alley-oop from Avery Bradley.
Yeah, that was a sweet play, though. Avery Bradley.
Who knew Avery Bradley could pass the ball?
That was, I mean, he made some really nice passes tonight. That's a positive. Avery Bradley was out there still doing his thing. He didn't shoot particularly well, but he is at another level offensively this year. And that's another running theme throughout, so I won't beat that to death. But just another example of doing some things out there that were really, really nice and that we never really saw before. Amir Johnson just got out-muscled. He just couldn't handle the Jokic, Nurkic, and I can't even tell those guys apart sometimes, but the Central European connection, those guys, just too much for him. And I wouldn't have played him much more either. But what are your other options? Tyler Zeller was not a great option. You got nothing else. Jordan Mickey played 19 minutes. So it was not a lot of great options for Brad Stevens. So let's look at what are we learning about this team in this situation? They're going to stink sometimes. They are going to stink sometimes. That's going to happen to every team. You're going to come out and they're going to have one of those games where they just suck. That happens to everybody. But there's something to be learned from situations like this where without some of your best players, how do they respond? How do they handle some of this adversity?
Yeah, that's one of the things the Celtics have kind of been very good at least in my opinion, over the past couple seasons, at least under Brad Stevens, is kind of when they face adversity, they've responded very well. You look at their records on the second night of back-to-backs and stuff like that. They kind of, when they're expected to lose, they kind of outperform expectations. So it's kind of troubling to see them perform with such a kind of a lackluster effort on a night like this. But it comes down to the fact that this isn't the Celtics team that we'll hopefully see moving forward. Wednesday night, Al Horford should be back in the lineup, maybe getting Kelly Olynyk back sometime this week, Jay Crowder sometimes next week. The fact of the matter is those players matter a whole lot. That was my big takeaway from the game, is that that when you're missing three of your top seven players, you're going to play poorly.
Yeah, that's basically, in a nutshell, part of the biggest problem for the Celtics. But still, it doesn't excuse the lack of effort. I guess I just can't get past that. But I just have to, I think, just chalk this up to, this was a game where I think the Celtics were looking at the same thing that we were looking at, which is this was a team at the end of a big road trip, a West Coast team out east. These are typically losses, and I think the Celtics expected to go out there and have it be a loss. And then once Moutier smacked them in the mouth, they had no response. There's nothing left. They couldn't muster anything up because they don't have the horses to make the big comebacks like they did in the past. You know, the Celtics last year in the third quarter would come out and give you a big blitz, and instead of cutting it to 15 with a full complement of players, maybe they would have cut it to 10. And then that changes the entire dynamic. When you're coming back from a 10-point, you know, once it's a 10-point game, then, yeah, they could hit a shot, but then you respond, and it's feels doable. When the Celtics cut it to 15 and then Gallinari hit a three, and Wilson Chandler would hit, you know, drive and score. Next thing you know, it's back to 20 again. You're like, ah, shit. Well, this is done. You know, it's a different mentality. But if you cut it to 10 and they pump it up to 15, you feel like, all right, they hit a couple of shots. We just come back and respond, and now it's back to 10, and you know you have time to kind of chip away at that. So it's, the effort was just not there, and that's it. We just gotta have to chalk it up to that and give Brad Stevens an opportunity to use this as a teaching moment. I wonder if Demetrius Jackson getting minutes and Terry Rozier only played 16 minutes. This is a great opportunity, a game like this, for Rozier to get a ton of minutes, and he didn't get a ton of minutes. He got 16 minutes. And I'm wondering if there's something there, and maybe Brad Stevens was just looking for any sort of something to get a spark, but I don't know why Rozier didn't play more.
Well, maybe it comes from just looking at Twitter after the game at Stevens' press conference. He said, "We had some players who are not playing who will play, but this is all about holding your ground physically." He also said that the Celtics are a finesse team, and basically he took a lot of blame for the game and said that he wasn't surprised they got smashed after what's happened earlier in the week. So he's basically coming out and calling his players soft and saying that we had some players who are not playing who are going to play in the future. It kind of sounds like he's – Terry Rozier is one of those players if he's not getting the minutes. And he's basically calling out the entire team for not being physically ready to play the Denver Nuggets, which is – something you wouldn't think you would say or hear about the Celtics this year.
Yeah, that's I'm interested to see how the team responds to this. I would assume that they come out on Wednesday and put forth a little bit more of an effort. But like Isaiah Thomas after the game says, when we don't come out with a sense of urgency, we're not a good team, and that's what happened tonight. That was true last year. That when the Celtics would play down to competition last year and look pretty bad. And then they would be the quote unquote Celtics and they would look great again. And I think the one thing that maybe we as observers, from fans to writers, overlooked is that need for the Celtics to really play at full speed all the time for them to be as good as we think they can be. When we sit there and put out 54 win predictions, that's not predicated on the Celtics just going out there and being more talented than teams most of the season. That's not necessarily the case. It's about them executing. And yes, it requires Al Horford to be out there and Jay Crowder to be out there. But even when they're not, it does require them to execute and run a crisp, clean offense and run a defense that is at least disciplined. And there was no discipline on defense. They made some really shockingly stupid decisions tonight. I'm stuck on the one where Jordan Mickey, and I know it's Jordan Mickey, but he came off of Fareed to try to double, I forget if it was Nurkic or somebody that was backing down Gerald Green. Like, okay, I get it. Gerald Green is there, and it's not a good defensive matchup. But he left a guy under the basket and went to go double team. Where? Why would you leave a guy alone under the basket to double team in that situation? Like, I don't understand that. I see that you recognize a mismatch, but your guy is standing right there on the block, and if you at least be big and come over and help and be in a passing lane, he not only came over to double, he just kind of left the passing lane wide open. It's just really, really bad. And again, I know it's Jordan Mickey, and he's very inexperienced. You know, second year player who is, you know, spent a lot of time in the D League. He's just getting some minutes. He's learning. But that's just horrifyingly bad defense. So lots to learn, lots for the Celtics to kind of work on, and hopefully the return of Al Horford, who hopefully is through the concussion protocol by the time Wednesday rolls around. That's going to help a lot. Kelly Olynyk coming back, that's going to help a lot too, because then you have a bench player who can go out there and maybe hold things together a little bit while the starters kind of get a little bit of rest. So
I just have one question for you. You talk about the Celtics kind of playing down to their competition and they coming out with like a poor effort tonight and dumb mental mistakes like the one you Jordan Mickey had. Is that on Brad Stevens not getting his players ready to play, or is that on just like the players – to a man, they're professionals, they need to perform? Because we hear about Brad Stevens being like one of the more positive coaches, and sure, we can get to see him get angry, but it seems like that's been a kind of a theme, is that his teams sometimes kind of play down to the competition and maybe think too highly of themselves. Is that on Stevens or is that on the players?
I think it's mostly on the players. I'm sure Stevens has some impact on that, but you can only tell these guys. I mean, what are you going to tell them? Like, hey, don't get so full of yourselves. These are all grown men, and that's maybe in college would be a different story, but these are grown men, professional NBA players who need to go out there and perform and play their best every time they're out there. That's so when a player is not giving effort, that's the player's fault to me. And yes, the coach can try to rah-rah and get people pumped up, but on the other hand, it's tough to do that 82 games a season over plus playoffs over multiple years to not say the same things over and over and over again and maybe lose the guys. So, you know, I think it's mostly the players and they just need to find it within themselves to go out and play hard. And when they know this, they know that when you don't play hard, this is the type of stuff that can happen to you. It doesn't matter what the Nuggets are or what their record is or what their record is expected to be. There are really, really good players on the Nuggets. Danilo Gallinari is a really, really good player. So that is not something you should take lightly. Moutier is maybe not what people, maybe he's not living up to the expectations that he had on him, but he's still really good. And, you know, guys like Wilson Chandler have positive, they can make positive impacts. He's not terrible. And if you're in the NBA, look, and Nurkic and Jokic, those are two quality big men. It's not a bad team. They've got talent. So if you want to go out there and, you know, screw around, you're going to get smacked. And that's just a lesson that they constantly have to learn. And that's up to them. It's up to the guys on the floor. It's up to the team leaders. It's up to Isaiah. It's up to Jay Crowder. Even if he's not playing, sitting on the bench, it's up to those guys to get their teammates kind of going.
No, I would agree. It should be up to the players. But there are some coaches where you think like, oh, the guys will kind of run through a brick wall for them, that person. And they seem to be more of like the rah-rah inspiring halftime speech coaches. And I don't think that's Steven's strength, but I think you're right. It all really comes down to the players deciding that they're going to like step up and play, give out their 100% effort. But I wouldn't say Stevens is necessarily in the best position to get that out of them every single night. So I think both contribute, but you're right. It comes down to the players having to step up. I just feel like after every single loss last year, not every single loss, but a lot of the losses last year when the Celtics came out flat, you would have Jay and you would have IT basically saying, this is on us. We need to do this better. And then their effort would be good for the next couple of games. And then they come out like a week later and put up another stinker. So I don't know what the Celtics need to do to kind of be more consistent on the effort end, because it kind of feels like we hear the same excuses. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they're willing to acknowledge the fact that they didn't have it some nights or they didn't bring the right effort. But it really shouldn't be something that happens multiple times a season. It should, if you think you're ready for the playoffs, you can't have any games like this. So it's something to keep an eye on, definitely, but it hopefully it changes moving into next week when they play the Wizards, the Knicks, and the Pacers.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, you get guys coming back and some teams that you should beat, and that could change. But look, you know, we're hard on guys. We're not out there every day practicing, and everybody has their bad days at work. Like that's just going to happen. Like I feel like today I'm not having the greatest podcast. The words just don't want to come out of my mouth. That's going to happen. So, but look, it happens to everybody too. San Antonio Spurs will have bad nights. The Warriors lost to the Lakers the other night. I mean, they just that stuff happens. So, I don't want to be like I'm critical, and these guys deserve to be criticized tonight. But in the long run, every team has these games throughout the season. Like, that just happens to everybody. It'll happen to us again. They'll go out there and they'll play, and it might be against Philly or Brooklyn or something like that, but it's going to happen. It happened to us last year. It happened under the Doc Rivers era. It happened everywhere. So we'll have to deal with it. But you know, and to a man, those guys, you see the quotes coming out afterwards. They're saying the same thing. So,
well, yeah, the only thing you can do is Bill Belichick this one, put it in the past. We're on to Washington.
That's it. Yeah, man, let's wrap this thing up because I don't have it tonight either. That's it. I'm following this. If I was out there, I would be leaving a man under the basket to double team somebody myself. So
we are all talk right now, just like Isaiah says, but we're all talk most nights. So,
all right, guys, hope you enjoyed the show. I'm going to go to bed because I am just done. I was actually falling asleep during the fourth quarter. That's how exciting that game was. I'm sitting there on my couch with my notepad, a pen, just like a little line as I was like dozing off. Like, huh? What? Oh, right. Yeah, here we go. So that kind of night for everybody all around. So once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Subscribe to us if you haven't done it. Check out the rest of the network. The Locked On Podcast Network is out there doing a lot of great things. Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy. Locked On Fantasy show is huge. I mean, it's a huge, huge show. People love to hear about fantasy basketball. Fantasy basketball is gigantic, and that show does a lot of good stuff. So check that out. Again, rate us 5 stars if you could, please. That will help us out a lot. And that's it. We'll talk to you tomorrow or whenever it is that you download the show again. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.